Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Studio is mobile today in Las Vegas as we get ready for Penn State at Colorado tonight at 10. And the only request I'll make to Kevin is to take the echo out.
Yeah, I'm not sure where you're getting any right now.
Well, all I know is that I talk and that I get to hear myself. It's not a great experience.
Okay, did that do anything?
I have no idea. Nope, still getting it.
How about that?
How about that? Nope. And how about that? That worked.
Yeah, that you're going to get nothing. Let's see.
That worked.
Oh, I got it. Hang on. Nah, I'll be right back. I think I figured it out.
Great. I'm glad he figured it out. We have the Kevin Herr memo of the day, which if I were a sponsor, I'd jump on. I would take care of that in a heartbeat. Here are
how about that? Did that do anything?
Yes. Yes, it did.
Great.
The Kevin Herr memo. ESPN outside the lines appears to be wrong. The NFL says they have not backed out of funding the studies for the National Institute of Health. Outside the lines reporting that the NFL didn't like the researcher involved in the study. Which is true. It's the same researcher who Chris Borland went with and I believe made a statement similar to one where he said that Roger Goodell inherited a cover-up from Paul Tagliabue, I believe. So that's the issue there. So they're uncomfortable with who's doing the research on what's a very important story. Let's see. Beckham appealing one-game ban will be heard tomorrow. Any chance this of being overturned? No.
I didn't think so either.
He may have had his reasons, and Josh Norman may not be a completely innocent party in all of this, but still you can't do what he did. There's no chance it'll be overturned. I don't think. Everybody saw it.
Well, everybody saw it, and then Fox ran it three or four times during the game on the broadcast. So, yeah, he didn't get away with anything.
No. No. Well, plus everybody else ran it, too, on highlights. Is it time for the Penguins to trade Crosby and Malkin? And if so, why? Go see the Pens. The Penguins are in a very interesting spot. You really do want to have two stars of that caliber on your team. And you build around them. But the Penguins as an organization are very thin. They don't have a lot of great parts around them. So do you then roll the dice, to use a Las Vegas expression, with the idea you deal them and you replenish the franchise by dealing them? In other words, a Herschel Walker type of move that the Dallas Cowboys made with Walker to Minnesota, which they then parlayed into draft choices, which they then parlayed into a team that won three Super Bowls. Or do you say we stick with them and we build around them? I say you stick with them and you build around them. You don't find talents like Crosby and Malkin every day in this league. You fight like heck if you're the Edmonton Oilers. And when draft day comes, you are thrilled beyond words that you have the first pick and not the third pick. Because the first pick gives you Connor McDavid. Jack Eichel is the second pick. He goes to Buffalo. You win with either guy. Eichel's a good player. Connor McDavid has a chance to be a great player. Once you get to that third, fourth, fifth guy, whatever, you've been aching to get guys like a Crosby and a Malkin into your organization. Crosby doesn't kill you financially. $8.7 million a year. That's what he always gets. You know, he wears 87. He was born in 87. And he gets, you know, is $8.7 million a year. And then there's Malkin. And I think that you build around them, and I think the Penguins have actually done a mediocre job of building around them, and it's more that issue than trading them. That's just me.
Well, I don't think you could trade both of them. You might be able to afford to trade one of them to try and get some talent to build around. But if you trade both of them, there'll be a revolt in Pittsburgh.
Well, it's more than that, though, Kevin. I just don't think it's smart to trade either one of them. I really don't. I think, you know, hockey is not just a one-line sport. You've got to have three lines. And if you've got to have two really good lines, then you go with it. I mean, what's really hurt them a little bit this year, for example, is the fact that a guy like Chris Letang has not been right since he came back. It hasn't helped that Pascal Dupuis is out. A lot of that has been, that's part of the problem that they've had. And, it's been, I wouldn't do it. I would figure out a way to build around them and then go from there. That would be me. And it's not because I'm not attached to anybody, but what I'm attached to is talent. And I just don't think that you get enough return talent-wise to make a difference. I just don't see it. Unless you're overwhelmed by a great trade. The next Kevin Herb line.
Go Hilltoppers? See.
No, nobody cares.
I do, because that game made me perfect on the season in the bowl picks.
Okay. Buster Olney. That's good. I'm glad you're perfect so far. I think it's great. Dick Girardi's laughing. He says, I'm 0-6.
Well, I'll tell you what. He picks
the spread. So, I mean.
Well, but anybody that picks college games, these early bowl games are not easy to pick. Anything past the earlier than the 28th can be really tough.
Well, I told Dick to take all the 5-7 teams.
Who is the next 5-7 team, by the way?
Is that Nebraska next? Or is it... it's Minnesota and Nebraska both are next up, right?
Let's see. Nebraska plays on the 26th, Minnesota on the 28th.
Okay, so it's Nebraska next, UCLA next. Now, do I want to conscientiously say go against my old friend Tommy Bradley? No.
No.
But if you're picking points, for example, I might. I mean, because I think Nebraska's played a little bit better than people realize. Let's see. Buster Olney wrote a story about tanking. And the Phillies are doing it like the Astros and the Cubs. He thinks the rules allow this. Is he right? Did the Astros, Cubs, and Phillies create a 61 team to get early draft picks? And should it be changed? Okay.
Did I read the story incorrectly? I mean, that was the assumption I was getting from him.
Tanking in baseball is so irrelevant. It's irrelevant. It's not like tanking in the NFL, and I get the first overall draft pick, and I get Jameis Winston. Okay? It's not like tanking in the NBA, where I get the first overall draft pick, and it's LeBron James. If I tank in Major League Baseball, I get, Mark Appel.
Somebody who's not going to make an immediate impact the way they do in other sports.
Exactly. Look, how have each of these teams been able to get to a point where they've been able to come back? They've made commitments to their farm system. They have drafted players and developed it. They've done it the slow way. Take, for example, the trade, the Hunter Pence trade. They got multiple prospects in that trade that has helped them. The Cubs have been able to mix in, name free agents like John Lester, a trade that gives them Jake Arrieta, and then they drafted well. Rizzo, Russell, they dealt Starlin Castro to the Yankees. They just signed Hayward. I mean, so they've drafted well. You don't get any benefit to me about, I took one of the top 10 guys. It takes forever for these guys to get there. This is not Al Kaline, who never played a game in the minor leagues. They all play in the minor leagues. All of them. And guess what? You don't go around with one draft pick and you're in good shape. Hey, we did great with our first pick. Some of these guys are 8th, 9th, 10th. You know, where everybody had a chance to pick them in rounds 1 through 5 or 6. No. I think that's a story that takes it. This Buster Olney story plays right into your personal fear. Thus, you know. So I can sit here and objectively look at you and go, hey, yo, it's minor league baseball. Slow down.
I don't agree with it as much with baseball as I do with football and other sports where players make an immediate impact. I agree with you on this. Baseball tanking is a little bit harder. I mean, if you want to create a 60-win team because you think you can pick the right guys and 4 years later be a talented team because you have a whole bunch of young picks, that's actually really impressive to me. Most teams can't do that.
Right. Well, but here's where changing over your organization makes a difference. The Phillies are in a turnaround process right now, where they're trying to turn around a veteran team with a lot of high salaries, and they need to get rid of the salaries and really start over again. They need Ryan Howard's salary off the books. They have Chase Utley's salary off the books. They have Jimmy Rollins' salary off the books. They have Cole Hamels' salary off the books. So they're able to get out from underneath the cloud of deep veteran salaries where you're not getting great production to begin with, and you need it off the books and you need to start over again and then take the money and roll it into multiple players or roll it into your farm system. And that's what the Astros have done. Because they've made some moves, like a Lance Berkman goes to the Cardinals. I mean, they've done some subtle things along the way people don't realize. Lance Berkman goes to the Cardinals. They get David Carpenter. Carp is one of the greatest guys I've ever been around. He actually started out in state college. But they get a guy like him. The Cubs have made some moves where they've been able to move some salary off the books. And that's what they did. Tanking, you can't tank in baseball. All you can do in baseball is to change your salary structure, get rid of salaries that are crushing you. Let me give you an example. The Cardinals. The Cardinals refused to pay Albert Pujols 10 years, $225 million. Remember that? And he went to the Angels instead, right? Their idea was, we can take the $225 million and we can roll it each year into three players each year instead of one player sagging the entire organization and bringing it down where we're really restricted. We can now take that money and each year roll that into three players at about, $7, $8 million per, which gives you more depth on the field to work with if we make the right moves with it. Ryan Howard's salary, which is, $25 million a year, and then Cliff Lee's salary and Cole Hamels' salary have dragged the Phillies down and have kept them away from making, from giving them options to make moves. The Astros had a couple players like that as well, which they moved out. Eventually, Biggio's salary came off the books. Clemens' salary came off the books. Pettit's salary came off the books. Jeff Bagwell's salary came off the books. Right? Cubs, they were getting nowhere with the veterans they signed. They got them off the books like Soriano and guys like that. And they started rolling it into the depth of their farm system. They drafted well, they signed well, they scouted well, and then they've added in some free agents to go with it. I mean, so tanking in baseball is about as, no offense to a very intelligent, talented guy, I think that's a stretch. You can tank in the NBA, we see it. You can tank in the NFL, we see it. Drafting Jameis Winston changes the depth of your team. Being able to draft Donovan Smith as a tackle to help him out in the second round changes your team. Every draft choice that you make in June will not help you for 3 or 4 years or 5 years. And you don't know along the way if they're going to need Tommy John. You don't know if they're going to be hurt and be set back. You don't know. This is a 3, 4, 5 year development plan. Jameson Taillon was the first overall pick by the Pirates. 4 years ago? He was the year after Gerrit Cole. Wow. You know, he was in State College for a little period of time. It was tremendous, the whole thing, blah, 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 blah. He had Tommy John last year. He's never pitched in the majors. Stetson Alley was their second pick. Stetson Alley was in State College. Throws 100 miles an hour. They've converted him to being a third baseman. So as somebody who sits there and watches minor league baseball, I can tell you that that article means zilch to me as much as it causes Philly fans such as yourself to panic.
No panic.
You are very good at panic.
Nope, no panic.
You're very good at panic.
I've just given up all hope.
And you're good at losing hope, panic, and very good at intense dislike. I got to give you credit. You're good. All three.
Very talented in three different things.
I always tell people, do what you do best. I got to give you credit. You found your niche. We'll come back. Bottom of the hour. News coming up. One day, one of your teams will be good. And then we'll have a little party here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kierwitz 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. What a great Christmas gift that would make, huh? Put a bow on that. Winner. I'm in Las Vegas, where tonight the Nittany Lion basketball team will take on a really good Colorado team. It's really the kind of tournament you want to have before you get to the Big Ten. Week from tomorrow, I'll be in College Park for Penn State and Maryland. Trimble, Lehman, Suleiman, Carter, Stone. Yeah, that group a week from tomorrow. You need to get ready for that. And tonight with Josh Scott, Josh Fortune, Torrey Miller, Dominique Collier. Good 10-1 Colorado team. Their only loss to Iowa State on opening night. They haven't lost since. They run off 10 in a row. High-octane team. About 46% from twos, 31% from threes in terms of percentage of points. They average 85 a game and 76 possessions a game. So they like to move against the Penn State team that likes to ratchet the possessions down. It'll be a great challenge for Jordan Dickerson tonight in the middle against Scott. And Scott's very similar to what they're going to see in A.J. Hammonds and in Diamond Stone and players like that in the Big Ten. That's tonight at 10:30. We're on beginning at 10. And then you either get Kent State, which is 7-2, really good. Maybe, let's say, second maybe only to Toledo right now in the MAC. Toledo's pretty good. And SMU, which is undefeated. SMU's had a couple of guys hurt. The transfer out of Villanova has been hurt. Missed the last couple of games. But this Tolbert kid who transferred out of Texas Tech, he's had back-to-back double-doubles. And his back-to-back double-doubles, he's had 41 rebounds. He's averaged 20.5 rebounds a game his last two games. Wow. And Shake Milton's having a great freshman year. And Larry Brown gets the coach's first game of the season tonight. First game of the season, Larry Brown gets coaches tonight off his suspension from the NCAA. And Larry Brown has been a great coach everywhere he's gone, ABA, college, NBA. Now, he's had a habit of maybe getting a couple of NCAA teams with a little probation, but hey, that's another story. Okay, time now for This Day in Sports History. In 1894, the United States Golf Association was formed in New York City. I'm a USGA member, as a matter of fact. 1920, Joe Lynch beat Peter Herman in the first blow-by-blow radio cast of a boxing match. Let's see, 1943, sporting goods manufacturers received permission to use synthetic rubber for the core of a baseball. 1962, Vince Lombardi, the coach of the Green Bay Packers, on the cover of Time magazine. The 1,000,000th NBA point was scored in this day in 1962. 1986 on this day, Joe Paterno was named Sportsman of the Year by Sports Illustrated, only the second time a coach had ever won the award. The other, John Wooden. And, let's see, and also on this date, 1998, the American Basketball League announced that it was going to be suspending operations and filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Oh, well. So that's it. That's this day in sports history. Yes, Joe Paterno, 29 years ago today, named the Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year. Only John Wooden, the only other coach that had ever done it before that. Not a bad duo right there. All right, back to the Kevin Herr memo, which is, we have to talk about the Redskins here at some point. Got to get into that. They got the Eagles this week. Huge game. Very big game. Which you'll hear on Eagle 107. It's Saturday night, right? Saturday night game.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
7 o'clock on Eagle 107. 8:25 is the kick.
There you go. So that's Saturday night. Huge game. We'll talk about that in a few moments. Also, patience in building. We'll talk about that, too, today. Kevin says, how do you feel about NFL teams resting starters if they lock the best record or have no chance of improving their position in the playoffs? Kevin naturally relates this to fantasy football.
Well, no, I just said I know how fantasy owners feel about this. I just want to, and I'm just curious the way a sports fan feels about it, not an NFL or team fan. I hate it from a fantasy standpoint. I absolutely hate it from a football standpoint if I'm watching a game and the top players aren't in it. I get it. I understand why you'd rest them. I don't like it.
I think that, to me, I wouldn't rest anybody. I know you risk injury, but I think at minimum, you get your players into, you know, depending on what the game looks like at that particular moment, at least three quarters worth of work. At least, if not all the way through. I think when I've watched teams rest players, you know what I've noticed? Not very sharp when they come back. I think you get into a routine of playing, and your body gets into a routine of playing. Now, for example, if I have a guy, say, for example, I've got a running back who has a sore ankle, you know, pretty sore ankle. But if the game meant something, we could tape him up and we could give him a go. Okay, I'd rest that guy. Now, that guy I'd rest because logically, there's a difference between being hurt and injured. Injured, you really can't go. Hurt, you probably can go. But here's a game that doesn't mean anything to me. So hurt means healing. Let's buy him some time and put him on the inactive list. All right. So I think everything goes on a case-by-case basis. A guy like that, I don't play. Because I'm resting him. No, he's hurt. And even though he could, quote, give it a go if I really needed it, why do I want to be stupid and not give him the rest? As opposed to guys who aren't hurt, I play them because I think they need to stay sharp. I think what I've seen over and over again is that teams don't look sharp when they have multiple players resting before the playoffs. I feel like I've seen that year after year. What about you?
I find that in the NFL, that especially if they rest a player and then they have a bye week, it's really bad. They come out flat in the first half of the game that they actually do play.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that, and it's more than that. I just think that, and usually when you come out flat, that lingers for a while in a game. It really is hard to flip the switch and, hey, voila, we play. I'd rather keep them sharp if I can, keep them in a rhythm, keep the timing down. But if I've got a guy who, you know, was willing to gut it out and play if I really needed him, I do rest him because it's stupid to play him when you can afford him the rest that he needs that would then make sure that he actually, instead of playing the game at 80%, maybe he can play the next game at 95%. So you get, I mean, it's a case-by-case basis, but if somebody where it's not really a case like that, then they play. I don't see why, you know. I'm not big on that. Let's see.
What about playing them the first half and letting them sit the second half?
No. You don't want to know why? That's a big mistake a lot of people make. You want them in the routine of coming out of the locker room at halftime and having to warm up and play and break a sweat. You got to keep that part of the routine going. You make a mistake to me by, oh, yeah, we're going to sit out the second. No, you got to still stay in that. If I'm going to keep you in the routine and sharp of like, okay, look, I want to make sure my timing's down on in routes. I want to make sure my timing's down when I throw the ball. I want to make sure my timing's still there when I blitz, things like that. I also have to keep them, we go in, we get our 12 minutes, we come out, we warm up, we got to play again. You got to keep that part of the routine going. Right, that's part of the routine of playing the game, and skipping a part of the routine, I don't think helps you. You still have to come out, and you've got to re-warm up again and get back going again, which is part of the routine of playing the game. So, no, I would disagree with that. Like I said, I would go three quarters with guys, or maybe near the end of the third quarter, start to pull them a little bit and put other people in. But part of the routine is coming out of that locker room and playing again. And so you got to keep that routine going, to me.
And I think the teams that really have to consider this right now are Carolina and New England. They are the ones that really have to think about this situation for the next 2 weeks. they're probably the only two teams that are really comfortable right now and could afford to do that, even if it's just the last week of the season. But again, you're actually setting somebody, in essence, for six quarters minimum because they have the bye week.
Right, exactly. And again, I wouldn't consider doing it unless a guy was going to try and gut it out for me and play 75 to 80%. Well, I'm not going to bother playing a guy that's going to go out and go 75-80% for me when I can buy him an extra week and the next game is at 95. Anybody that's in the 90% plus in the ability to play, they play. You know, anybody that's below that, where I know buying them a little time is going to make, you know, is going to heal them up a little bit because they are banged up, yeah, then I will. I think it's a case-by-case basis. Doing it in droves where, hey, we're not going to play Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison, all things like, oh, no, why not? Now, as for the fantasy aspect.
Well, you know, the fantasy aspect is really difficult here because.
I realize the NFL does not really care about fantasy numbers.
You
think Ron Rivera cares about your fantasy team?
No, absolutely not.
He cares about the Carolina Panthers.
Right, of course.
So that's okay. That's the gamble you take playing the game.
I agree with you.
All right, that's part of your gamble playing the game. The other night.
No, wait. You can't use the word gamble. You can't use the word gamble because DraftKings says it is not gambling.
Yeah, New York State agrees with me. So, the other night here at Sportsbook, Dick Girardi, Karen Girardi, Jeff Tarman, and I were having dinner. And suddenly, as we're eating, the place explodes, going crazy. And so we all look up, and the Giants tied the game at 35. Okay? A few minutes later, Carolina kicked the game-winning field goal. Guess what noise we heard?
The clinking of dinner.
Nothing. Why? It didn't matter who won the game. The Giants beat the spread. And not only that, they beat the over-under. And that was all they wanted. That's my biggest... You know, look, anybody can do entertainment-wise what they wish. I don't care. I mean, if you want to play fantasy football, I think that's great. Gets you more engaged. It's more fun. A lot of 18 to 35-year-olds are getting more engaged in sports like Major League Baseball and the NFL and so forth because of fantasy. I think that's great because that's an entire generation of fans that 20, 30 years from now are going to love baseball and they're going to love football or whatever fantasy sport they're playing. So I'm all for that. If anybody wants to place a legal bet at Sportsbook, fine. That's great. If that enhances your experience, great. But at the same time, I also know that, to me, I get a real enjoyment out of a game by watching a game. I'm, you know, Akron and Utah State are playing right now. Akron's winning 7-0. Well, I'm, you know, to me, I enjoy watching the game. But that's my enjoyment. And the winner and the loser in the game happens to be something that, to me, is part of the game. The winner and the loser. And the winner and the loser is a part of the part of this to me and all of this along the way. And that's where I get the enjoyment. Now, if it's more interesting for you to put money on it, okay, so be it. I don't have a problem with that. But at the same time, don't get mad at Ron Rivera and Bill Belichick for sitting there saying, oh, wait a minute. Uh-oh, here's a problem. Kevin Herr has Jonathan Stewart on his fantasy team. I know Jonathan's got a bad ankle, you know, and all that. Play him! You got to play him! Kevin needs him!
Well, no, wait.
Don't sit there and say that.
No. If he's injured, I don't want him to play him. But if he's not injured, listen, as a fantasy player, the most frustrating week is that week 17. A lot of times, you're either in the playoffs in that week, or if you're in a total point system, this is the make-or-break week for you to get in the money. Now you have to sit there and go, okay, yeah. Do I want to play Tom Brady now, or am I going to play my backup, which is Blaine Gabbert or whatever? I don't know. I'm just saying, when you have to sit there and debate whether you have to play Tom Brady or not to stay in the money, That's frustrating as to no end. Now, that's not to mention the fact if you're playing head-to-head, Week 17 is probably your Super Bowl.
And then there are the people who are need help from the needy family fund who are deciding whether to pay the electric bill or the gas bill. All right, that's a bigger decision. We'll come back with more in a moment from Las Vegas on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Here in Las Vegas, where tonight the Nittany Lion basketball team will take on Colorado in the Continental Tire Las Vegas Classic. 10:30 will be the tip-off tonight, Eastern Time. We're on the air beginning at 10 o'clock with the Penn State Bookstore tip-off show. Some Georgia news today. Georgia has suspended their linebacker Tim Kimbrough for the game. Kimbrough's their third-leading tackler, good player on this team. At linebacker for them, and he is out of the game because of a suspension. Also, one of the three running backs that they use, Brendan Douglas, is going to miss the game because he has a wrist injury. He is fourth on the team in rushing this year. Remember, Nick Chubb had to leave in the middle of the sixth game of the year with a knee injury. That's why he's the fourth leading rusher, because Chubb's numbers are in there too. But Sony Michel will be the starter. A 1,000-yard rusher this year, and Keith Marshall will back him up. But Brendan Douglas, who is actually, I mean, I look at the tapes. He's out there. He plays. He will not play in the game with a wrist injury. And Tim Kimbrough, the starting linebacker, is out. The third-leading tackler on this team for Georgia, suspended. The infamous violation of team rules. Always love that. Boy, thank goodness Kevin doesn't play college fantasy. All sorts of violation of team rules stuff.
I got nothing.
Makes it an average day. You walked into that one.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
I went to the Hoover Dam yesterday. Okay, really, nothing to hide.